Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 637, titled Catching Up with Daniel Hopsicker. This program is being recorded on June 8th of the year 2008. And once again, it's my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves, for the first time in, 7 or 8 months, Daniel Hopsicker, the author of, among other titles, Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland, and the maven of the website madcowprod.com. Daniel, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Dave.
Now, you've characteristically been very busy since we last spoke, back all the way back in 2007, and one of the things that has transpired, and we can't talk about this directly, or we can't mention any names, but I am going to allude to it, an individual about whom you had written, and who was certainly, according to the information that you had, involved with the milieu, my favorite word again, that was implicated in the September 11th attacks, has successfully pursued a lawsuit against you in large measure because you didn't have the dough to send private investigators around the world and do all this kind of stuff. But you've gotten hammered by the individual who shall remain nameless in a way that a lot of people had been hammered, namely a lot of the people a lot of the interests implicated in September 11th have a lot of money, such as the Saudis, and they can sue all around the world, including in the United Kingdom, which is really very nasty. And the fact of the matter is a lot of the folks that are investigating just don't have a whole lot of money, and so you basically, you know, the elephant stepped on the game little hunter in this case. And so,
well, you know, let's talk about this for a minute.
Yeah.
First of all, what one discovers when one is sued for slander and libel is that the burden of proof is on you to prove that your allegation was correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And immediately that involves resources that only people being backed by First Amendment advocates have. And unfortunately, I don't turn up among those number very often, if at all. Strangely enough, none of the stuff I do ever shows up on Project Censored. Have you noticed stuff like that?
Daniel, the whole so-called progressive and so-called investment community, it's so gamed. And, you know, how much of it's live and how much of it's memory? How much of it is just people saying, you know, when you venture past a certain point, you get squashed. And so they decide, hey, you know, why go there, you know? But no, you definitely, it hasn't appeared on Project Censored. It hasn't appeared on very many places, but it has appeared here.
So look, here's what I want to do. Since you brought it up,
yep.
I'm going to retail for you briefly,
mm-hmm.
The four times I have been sued so far, and then maybe give you a jot or a line about the two people threatening to sue me now.
Because
in 20, 30 years, okay, you can track the people who have sued me, and discover the truth about anything that I was talking about. The first person to sue me was the personal attorney for the Barry Seals drug smuggling organization, which the government alleged he had caused basically the cocaine epidemic in the 1980s by importing over $5 billion worth of cocaine through Mena, Arkansas.
The he, by the way, being Barry Seal. Go ahead.
Barry Seal as part of the Iran-Contra proceedings, which were much more about cocaine trafficking than ever came out. Okay, so this attorney sued me, and successfully. I can't use the names of any of these four individuals. I'm best advised not to, even if I could.
Sure, but that's why I was equivocal.
And he went on to an illustrious career working and continues to work with Adnan Khashoggi, a CIA fixer since the 1970s, a Saudi billionaire and an arms merchant who has made the world what it is in many ways. Okay, so apparently, though he's an innocent individual, although that certainly would be in question. Let's see. So that's the first guy. The second guy that sued me owns the biggest restaurant in Texas, which by itself is quite a claim. He was the former owner of a chain of steakhouses during the 1980s that was alleged to have been used to launder proceeds from Barry Seal's drug trafficking organization. Now, when you think about it, importing and distributing narcotics, while a bit of a tricky business, is definitely doable. Narcotics aren't necessarily bulky. On the other hand, laundering the money that comes flowing in when one is trafficking in narcotics is a major problem because the money is bulky, okay? $2 million barely fits in, you know, two or three suitcases. So, and that's what Barry Seal used to travel around with, just as walking around money. So, this guy, the second guy that sued me, owned this steakhouse chain that was being run under the name of an oil company. You know, as if Ruth and Chris's steakhouse, and it certainly wasn't Ruth and Chris, because Ruth hated this guy, as if Ruth and Chris's steakhouse chain was being run as Trinity Energy. Okay? So, and I had this guy dead to rights. He was at Carlo Marcello's party on the night that John Fitzgerald Kennedy was assassinated. November 22nd, is it?
19, of course. By the way, very, very quickly for people not familiar with Carlos Marcello, capo mafioso for New Orleans for a long, long time. David Ferry, who worked for the intelligence community and CIA, and one of the principal figure in Jim Garrison's investigation, also doubled as an investigator for Carlos Marcello. So that's who we're talking about here. Go ahead, Daniel.
Okay. The third person that sued me was a German pilot who I alleged in Welcome to Terrorland, which is now available in paperback, by the way, and there's two new chapters, Dave, so like, if we get a moment, let's talk about what's in those chapters.
Okay.
I think it's important. But the third person that sued me was a German pilot who I alleged in Welcome to Terrorland had been one of six or seven German and Swiss associates, close associates, of Mohammed Atta in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
During the 18 months he was here before the attack. No one knows that there had been any German, I mean, certainly hasn't surfaced other than through me that this had been the case. Now, this guy had bought a business, he could very likely illegally, because foreigners aren't allowed to do this, a flight school business in Naples, where Mohammed Atta is known to have spent quite a bit of time, from another German pilot named Wolfgang Boringer. Wolfgang Boringer was the subject last year of an FBI terror alert in the South Pacific until he was apprehended. And when he was apprehended, he went in the words of one of the FBI guys, he went from being a three in terms of our interest to being an eight. So Wolfgang Boringer, who Amanda Keller identified as being Mohammed Atta's closest associate. Once Wolfgang showed up, he told me, she told me, once Wolfgang showed up, the two of them were inseparable, riding around. They got thrown out of Hooters together. So Wolfgang Boringer, who, I mean, if he's adjunct today, what was he then? When he was palling around with Mohammed Atta, at the same time that this Wolfgang Boringer was palling around with Mohammed Atta, he was the personal pilot for an extremely curious individual named Kozeny, a Russian expatriate who came to the U.S., made some really interesting and curious associations with American nuclear physicists, went to Harvard, and then moved to Czechoslovakia when the Soviet Union fell, and within a year controlled one-third of the Czech economy at the age of about 30. So I'm getting sued by people with some interesting associations, wouldn't you say? So that's, what is that, are we at three now? Okay, the fourth person owned a convenience store where Mohammed Atta and his terrorist associates hung out while they were in Venice, without dispute, owned a convenience store like a 7-Eleven where Atta hung out while he was in Venice. And a lot, and you know, one among many Arabs, it was their local hangout. And it's about six blocks from the Venice airport, right on the way into town. So it's not hard to believe that was the case. At the same time he owned that convenience store, he was an executive in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, of arguably the most corrupt U.S. defense contractor in American history, the Titan Corporation, which has been convicted of having hired translators that were torturing people at Abu Ghraib, was convicted. I mean, some of the things this corporation has been convicted of are so colorful. I mean, it's amazing they haven't made a movie about the company. The Titan Corporation was convicted of thick they were the biggest contributors to Randy Cunningham, the convicted Southern California representative, and also Duncan Hunter. Duncan Hunter, who I guess ran for the Republican nomination for president, and I guess he's the head of the Armed Services Committee or something very close to that. So I was sued by this guy who's Lebanese, and apparently things I alleged that this guy had done had been done by his brother-in-law, who is currently unavailable for comment, holed up somewhere in Lebanon. Those are the four so far. So you can imagine, if nothing else, Dave, I've had a colorful little writing history this past 7-8 years, haven't I?
You have indeed, and setting a larger context, one of the reasons, and there are a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons why there hasn't been more progress in the actual investigation of the various aspects of the events of September 11th is that obviously some very powerful Saudis and the connections between the Saudis and the petroleum industry and the president and vice president of the United States, not to mention Karl Rove, whose father was a corporate geologist with Getty, are profound. And they got a lot of money. The oil business produces a lot of money. And when you can throw that money around, you can hire, you know, big, high-priced law firms. None of that, but when they can sue you in the United Kingdom, which has happened to people like Rachel Ehrenfeld and others, and there are very serious questions about the sovereignty of U.S. judicial proceedings, it's a good way to keep people quiet. And, you know, it's a disturbing pattern, but it's also something that a lot of people have to realize. It's one of the reasons why there isn't more vigorous investigative reporting, because lawsuits are expensive and they're also stressful. And when you ain't got a lot of money, then there's just not a whole lot you can do, you know? So it's like Billie Holiday said, you know, God bless the child who's got his own, you know?
So, Dave, yeah. Now it's time for the kicker.
Okay. All righty, the kicker.
Now it's time for the payoff. I mean, I could tell you about the two people who are threatening to sue currently, both of whom appear to be deeply involved in the biggest drug scandal that I've ever come across, which is the sale of 100 planes, American planes, to the Sinaloa cartel last year. So we won't even come to them, at least not yet, unless you want to talk about them. I don't need to. But the kicker here, okay, is that after having squeezed me in this way and in other fashions for the past half dozen years, one of these individuals has taken the domain name DanielHopsicker.com.
Wait a minute. This is an enemy of yours who's threatening to sue you?
This is one of the guys that sued me. This is a German pilot. This is Stefan Verhaeren. I can say his name in this connection because I'm not talking about whatever connection he may have had with the terrorists. Stefan Verhaeren, German pilot, who illegally purchased a flight school business in Naples, Florida, from Wolfgang Borger, a German pilot and apparently a CIA asset, owns DanielHopsicker.com. And apparently I'm finding out it'll cost me probably $5,000, $10,000 to get it back, or money I, of course, don't have, because I've not been asked to weigh in on MSNBC lately.
Interesting. By the way, in that context, you know, I'm in between the break, I'm going to dig up the reference. Although there has not been a lot of corroboration for a lot of the stuff. There was an L.A. Times article in November of 2001, which I excerpted. People can go, by the way, people can go to the WFMU download file, and they can hear me read an L.A. Times story from November of 2001, in which a guy who was at one point a roommate of some of the hijackers in southern Florida and has been sort of traveling under a cloud because of that, and he complains. He said, why is everybody, I'm paraphrasing here, why is everybody casing on me? How about all these Germans and Austrians and these other people, these Swiss who were moving in and out of the apartment and others? So there, although no names were mentioned, this is somebody who saw Germans and Austrians and others.
And Dave, if you're sure that this is a November 2001 article.
You know, at the break point, I'm going to go and I'm going to, I can't print up the article itself, right, but I'm going to print up the reference, and listeners who hear this can go right to the download files for the record 336, and they can, I think it's the next to last story that I cover in for the record 336, so people can check it out for themselves.
Yeah, well, that's months before I got here.
Yep, I know. I know. But so this is, you know, you're not the only person talking about the Germans in South Florida hanging out with Mohammed Atta. So far, you're the only person naming names. But there was at least one major newspaper which did carry a story about that. And like I say, one of these guys who was of Middle Eastern / Muslim extraction is saying, hey, why is everybody complaining about me? How about all these Germans and Austrians and these other people who are moving in and out of there? So, you know, you certainly had the right string, and you may have had the right yo-yo, although it turns out that, you know, a relative of this fellow whose name we can't mention, the man who wasn't there, was the person whose proprietary interests you attributed to this person.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it was his brother-in-law and not him.
That's correct.
All righty.
And so available for questioning.
Yeah, and it is interesting. The only thing I would wonder, and I'm certainly not a lawyer, but I do know that when somebody is a public figure, then it makes suing a whole lot more difficult. Now, whether the individual in question could be considered a public figure, certainly, not, until you mentioned his name, he wasn't. But afterward, you know, that's debatable. Probably not, but it is interesting to contemplate. So Stephen Verharen took the domain name danielhopsicker.com.
Yeah.
So I wonder what he's trying to do.
Well, you know, and when I found out that I have to go to ICON and you know, it's going to cost $5,000 at least in legal fees to do it, which money I don't have, I had a laugh.
Yeah,
I may have had a drink. And then, because he had registered my name under his corporate shell, which is Verharen, Inc., I had an associate. An associate of mine had the brilliant idea of going out and registering Verharen, Inc., which we now control.
Well, this is strange. And by the way, my engineer, God bless him, just brought this up while we're talking. And, yep, it's right there. So this is what do you suppose? Now, this is speculation, Daniel. What do you suppose he's trying to accomplish with this?
Well, look, Dave, let me put it this way, okay? I mean, I don't have a whole lot of visibility, as you probably know.
Uh-huh.
And I certainly feel that for the amount of amazing stuff I've turned up, you know, very little has surfaced, okay? But this is all by way of a pretty, you know, backhanded compliment. I mean, I can't take it any other way but that I've been far more highly effective at uncovering the truth about things people don't want us to know about, then can I say this? I've been lucky enough, okay, to have been more successful at discovering things that people don't want us to know about than almost anyone I know. And if there's any benefit in this to me, I guess if there's any psychic benefit, I guess it's that. I hope, it's my fervent hope, that sometime in the future, 20, 30 years from now, people will happen upon my investigation here in Venice, Florida, and that it will be something like the Garrison investigation was in providing signposts, you know, to what happened in the Kennedy assassination.
In that regard, Daniel, one of the strengths of your work is the deep politics and deep historical investigative capacity, because you started out with Barry Seal, who was working for David Ferry and who may very well have been flying a getaway plane for the Kennedy assassination, followed him up through his CIA and intelligence career, on up through the Contra drug trafficking, and then when you began investigating September 11th and the activities related to that, you came across evidentiary tributaries from some of the clandestine air fleets and people involved with the Contra cocaine trafficking, to the weird and illegal stuff that is involved with the milieu that you're investigating in connection with Mohammed Atta. So you went literally from looking at somebody who was an associate of David Ferry's, Jim Garrison's original focal point in his investigation, and followed the tributaries through time and across the southern United States and really in around the world, and came up with links to September 11th and a whole lot of clandestine and unsavory activities, which undoubtedly has earned you the attention and the litigation that you have and that you've been subjected to. And so I don't think that's an inappropriate comparison.
from the frying pan into the fire, Dave.
Yep.
And that's, and, you know, I feel blessed, and as far as that goes, because I'm a curious person. I'm interested in, and apparently, with Barry Seal, I you know, hit on a rich vein leading right to the heart of the country, in some ways. So it's been an interesting time. It remains an interesting time. Stuff I'm working on right now is pretty pretty darn earth shattering. If you got time to hear one line about it before you break.
Oh yeah, we've got plenty of time. Yeah, we're moving toward the gun lap for this side, but we've got some time. So one hesitates to use the term shoot under the circumstances, but go ahead.
Well, okay, let's talk about that, okay? Because here's what I've taken from my experience, okay? The first line of, I guess, Tale of Two Cities was the best of times, it was the worst of times. At some place inside myself, I still believe what I was taught when I was 8 years old, that this is the greatest country on the face of the earth. All evidence to the contrary. you know, there is evidence for that just in my experience. I'm alive, Dave. In 85-90% of the countries around the world, I'd be dead, and in the remaining 10%, I'd have been exiled. And I'm here.
Or you might be languishing in the manacles in right next to where I'd be languishing, in the same dungeon, the same political prison. Yeah, no, there is. I mean, for all of the horrible things we talk about, and as far off course as America's gone, you know, most countries, neither you nor I could even begin to do what we do publicly.
That's correct. So I'm grateful for that.
Yep.
in a strange way.
Me too.
Me too. That, you know, they squeeze me until I yelp. But I'm walking around, you know, with a waterproof skin still so far. So that's a good thing. I guess that represents progress.
Daniel Hopsicker does not yet sleep with the fishes.
No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. You know, so and with any luck, you know, I'll remain that way. And I'm here in Florida. I'm behind enemy lines, Dave. Okay,
mm-hmm.
is how it feels most of the time. Okay, behind enemy lines here in Florida. And it's a good Lord. I mean, it is a Carl Hiaasen book come to life. It's Elmore Leonard live. Okay. Two writers that write about Florida a lot. I mean, it is absolutely more colorful than can possibly be imagined, and it's all right in your face.
We'll call it Miami vice versa.
Yeah, there you go. Because, well, that's actually what happened back. I mean, once they've named a TV show Miami Vice against you know which the business you're carrying out in that particular town, it's good idea to probably move it somewhere else, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently that's what they did in the sleepy west coast of Florida, the Gulf Coast, the Sunset Coast, for many of America's senior citizens, incongruously became the place where, you know, some international vice lords operate. International vice lords. What vice lords? I like that. International vice lords. Hard to know what to call them, you know.
I think there are a lot of things we could call them. Most
bankers in Switzerland probably call them sir.
I was going to say the bankers in Switzerland refer to them as their immediate superior.
There you go. What a world, huh?
Yeah, well, it is, and you've been doing more than your share to show us the reality of, you've been setting to verse the Miami Vice, so to speak.
Well, I like that. Setting to verse the Miami Vice. You want to hear something else?
Yeah, let's do it. We got about 5 minutes, so why don't you give us a little teaser, Daniel? And then during the break, I'm gonna get you the specific reference for the LA Times article, and
okay.
And it'll be people. I'm gonna excerpt it the next time I update September 11th, or maybe the next time you and I visit, and I'll splice that in at the beginning because you know you're not the only person talking about the Germans with whom Otto was associating. While we're doing, while Daniel is conferring in the background with an associate, www.madcowprod.com. Daniel.com is Daniel's website. He is the author of Barry and the Boys about Barry Seal, a narrative that begins with Barry Seal working for the same Civil Air Patrol unit that was headed by David Ferry and that included Lee Harvey Oswald, right on up through Barry Seal's role trafficking arms and other things for the Central Intelligence Agency while still in high school, his possible slash probable role flying a getaway plane for the Kennedy assassination, on up through events connected to Watergate, events connected to the Iran-Contra scandal, massive cocaine smuggling, and his eventual gunning down by some of his bosses. And then following that on up through the activities of Mohammed Atta and company in South Florida. And that book is called Welcome to Terrorland, now out in paperback with two new chapters that have never before, at least discussion of which has not yet been launched by anybody but Daniel Hopsicker.
Well, but at least someone else is finally making a buck off of it.
Somebody else is.
Somebody else.
You mean other than the tort lawyers who've been coming at you in battalions?
A book comes out tomorrow called The Garden of Last Days, written by a guy whose first book was on Oprah's book list. So this book is going to make him his second million, which is really kind of painful, because if it was his first million, I wouldn't mind so much. But this guy writes a book that takes place on the weekend before 9/11, and it involves, it's all about Mohammed Atta and his stripper girlfriend.
And this was on Oprah's book list?
No. His first book, House of Sand and Fog, was on Oprah's book list. He's an Oprah's book list writer, author. This is his second book. It's called The Garden of Last Days, and it's about Mohammed Atta and his stripper girlfriend the weekend before 9/11.
I have just one quick question, Dan. Who's Oprah? I'm kidding. Bad joke.
Very bad joke.
Yep.
To me, dude, because Welcome to Terrorland might have sold about 5,000 times more copies than it did had I been able to catch a spot on Oprah, for God's sake.
Sure.
So, apparently fictionalization of the truth is you can make it, a buck. Of course, I mean, there's nothing I can do about that. You can fictionalize anything that's been put into the public domain. So,
mm-hmm.
I just think it's pretty curious. And I wonder if anyone will ask him what it's based on.
Well, you can do that. And actually, there have been books. In fact, I've done a couple. I've done programs about a couple of books that I suggested were reality presented as fiction because it was too hot to handle, so to speak. Well, but that's another subject. So another person basically has picked up the same investigative thread that you've been pursuing, only decided, I guess, perhaps Daniel, maybe your experience at the dirty end of the legal stick has convinced him he'd put it as fiction.
Well, apparently he read my book and decided to fictionalize it, which is, I guess, perfectly legal. Leaves me feeling a little left out, but there you go.
It happens. It happens.
So, life is full of little ironies.
It is indeed. Very quickly, Daniel, your website.
MattGalprod.com.
And your books.
Welcome to Terrorland and Barry and the Boys.
All righty, and Welcome to Terrorland, now out in paperback with two new chapters, and we'll be talking about a number of different things. And by the way, you have been ever busy, your experience with the negative side of litigation notwithstanding, and we're going to update some of those stories, including some that have are relevant to this presidential election year. However, that we're going to do on side two, because this concludes side one of For the Record program number 637, catching up with Daniel Hopsicker. This is being recorded on June 8th of the year 2008. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.